guitarra. Okay, so let's start with this. What's your name?
Q-Tip.
Where are you going? Who are you going with?
Me, Ali.
My wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it, I got to get it. I left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it, I got to get it.
I love that song. I absolutely love that song. It puts me in a happy place. It's gray and cloudy and murky and rainy here in Dallas, Texas, and I hate it. I love seeing the sun. I don't know what it is, but the gray weather just puts a shroud all over me. And it. Hopefully I'll put some music on this afternoon and I'll get uplifted. And maybe even after this drive-through HR with Rob's help, it will be inspiring and I'll shirk all of the weather challenges that we might have here in the greater DFW area. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Drive Through HR. Brian and Nisha aren't with me today. It's just me solo, and we have such a wonderful guest that I'm not even going to be worried about all that. Rob, do us a favor, if anyone hasn't already stalked you on Twitter or LinkedIn, do us a favor and introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Ah, okay. Well, I have had the pleasure of being in the recruiting industry for about 16 years, and I actually started out in the retained search world, focusing in high tech, and from there went and did an internet startup for a while until it blew up, and worked for JP Morgan Chase doing their sales recruiting and headhunting for a while, but then missed high tech, and the National Lab called me, and for the past 9 years, I've been a headhunter for a National Lab out in eastern Washington State, basically focusing on hard-to-fill and strategic roles that have some esoteric and niche high-tech needs, and basically calling people and selling them on change to come move out here to rural Washington.
Nice.
Before the I was in the Army doing the Stars and Stripes gig for about 5 years. Prior to that, got my undergraduate degree at University of Washington and an MBA over at Washington State.
So you can claim both alumni networks. All of Washington is yours.
Absolutely. I just own it, except maybe for like Central and some of the other Northwest, East, South Washington State schools.
Let's just call those the less desirable. Let's just.
I'll go with that.
Right? do us a favor and tell us a little bit about when I say keeping you up at night, probably not much is keeping you up at night, but what's top of mind for you these days?
Well, top of mind for me, I don't know about what other recruiters go through in their daily grind, but for me, if I don't fill my openings, my position does not get refunded. My clients have the luxury of deciding whether or not they're actually going to fund me on a yearly basis. So, like, I'm kind of on a temporary assignment every day. So what keeps me up at night is what keeps my clients up at night. So for me, it's most recently, it's the drastically shifting workforce plan that the government shutdown has recently caused, you know, with my yearly planning. You know, the echo effects of that have changed, you know, what our organization is going to hire and bring on in terms of additions for the year. But also the strategic positions that my clients want to fill. I mean, those are keeping me up at night. I've got a high energy physicist visiting the lab today as an example who, you know, my clients are like, we're going to close this guy. We need this guy to fill our strategic need. And if you don't get him, then, you know, that's the stuff that keeps me up at night.
There's always so many of those gals and guys in the world, right?
I imagine you can say that for every esoteric position, right? I think any of the recruiters out there, most recruiters, I think what we're dealing with in HR is a talent scarcity issue for the most part. I mean, there are some brands out there where, you know, the recruiter walks into their company and they've got like 5,000 people who've applied for their job and they have a sorting issue. But I don't think that's most recruiters. I think most recruiters are working for middle to small companies with not very large brands there's a talent scarcity issue out there, and what's keeping them at night is how in the heck am I going to get the right talent basically to accept my offer and to join my organization, right? You know, so I think I think if you pull like a random 7 out of 10 recruiters out of any type of recruiting-centric show, that's going to be what they're going to say.
Nice. Take us into your day in the life. What is, you know, after the shutdown, now that you're back, you're almost kind of dealing with what's there. What's a normal day, quote-unquote normal day, look like for you?
Oh, boy. a normal day. Well, I do have the luxury of not having the volume of some of the larger companies. So my rec load is not as great. You know, I might only have about 30 to 35 positions at any given time. And I would say that a lot of, I think, recruiters who work on strategic or executive level positions just do that only. But I also have to deal with the day-to-day stuff that my client needs to get done. So, I mean, literally I just had in my inbox pop open a senior executive assistant that's got to get posted, right? So I don't think I'm that different from the recruiter on the street where I've got probably a third of my positions are going to get filled via referral. You know, you got people who are internal who are applying for jobs, right? And you're working offers on those. And then the positions where no one's applying, you know, the stuff that's keeping me up at night. Like an example, I just literally posted 2 days ago for a position that's going to be based in the Slovutich, Ukraine, on the Chernobyl site to help with, like, electronic engineering and safety controls. And we're going to have to have a specialized engineer who's willing to live in Chernobyl for about 18 months. You know, so that's, like, one of the things that's keeping me up at night. So that's, like, one of the literally the days in the life.
I can imagine that conversation with the spouse, right? Like, no, yeah. It's going to be fine. I'll come home every quarter, and hopefully I won't have too much radiation coming back.
That's a real-life job, man. If you go out on LinkedIn, you're going to see that position posted for an electrical engineering and control specialist based out of Slovutich, Ukraine. Just posted yesterday. So, I mean, those are the things that keep me up at night. Right. And I think it's like a constant. I think most recruiters, just like any position, it's like a death by a thousand bites. Right. You get kind of thrown into the pool and the piranhas are kind of nibbling at you from all angles. You know, yeah, we always look for the sharks and you want to take care of the top of mind big stuff. Yeah, I want to make sure my high energy physicist is closed. I'm going to make that guy happy. But, you know, I got to approve the admin rec. You got to still route resumes for the internal position. You got to deal with your HR generalist partners and, you know, keep that going. And
Let's talk a little bit about candidates. I want to kind of get a sense for what you look for in candidates, skills, personality, aptitude, attitude, competencies. Like when you're first looking at a candidate, take us into behind your eyeballs. What are you looking at in candidates?
Well, I think it has to go for us, in order for me to be successful in my role to actually find somebody and to sell them on moving to the lab for whatever the job's going to be, it all starts with the needs assessment. And I'm a huge follower of Lou Adler. And years ago, he wrote a book called Hire With Your Head. And a lot of people who are probably listening to your radio show are familiar with his views on something called a performance profile versus a position description. And for me, what I try to understand as much as possible on the front end for any position that I'm actually going to headhunt on is focusing on what candidates are actually going to do. You know, so I really need to understand from my managers, okay, what do you want this person to actually do? Okay, well, we need them to actually develop a new low-noise amplifier for the specific type of radiation detection equipment. Okay, that's great. So what type of background do they have to do that? Okay, well, they have to probably have a PhD or a master's degree in electrical engineering, and they probably have to have some physics background as well. Okay. And then once I actually understand what the actual business problem is, what I look for, my number one thing in candidates, it's just really it's people who want to do that. Because the only way I'm ever going to get someone to move to rural Washington State or to ever consider a job like in Chernobyl are people who are really passionate about solving that particular problem. And I found that the rest of the stuff kind of takes care of itself. So, like in that example I talked about with the low noise radiation detection electrical engineer, you know, in my sourcing, I only probably found about 350 people around the world who could do that, right? And then it's a process of just calling all of those 350 and talking about the position. You know, and I had, you know, I eventually got the position hired, but it took me, you know, I had three finalists in there. You know, I had two offer turndowns before I could get that person in the door. But all of them had a little bit of it, you know, just walking through what those candidates need. So for me, it's all about what is the candidate going to do and what is the candidate passionate about doing it? Can they do that? And then kind of the rest I just kind of let take care of itself.
What's the candidate experience? Obviously, you track all the national, domestic and international kind of stuff, fodder around candidate experience. But, you know, I don't want to assume that it's important to you or the company that you're with, the organization you're with. What's the candidate experience like for you? Like, do you care
about
it?
Well, I am glad that you asked that question. Our lab was actually the first winner of the inaugural Candidate Experience Awards. We were the top winner. I think we tied with Sage Networks. The first year that Jerry Crispin and the Talent Board did their Candidate Experience Awards. We also won a Candy Award last year. I did not enter last year. Shame on me. And Jerry Crispin did pull me aside at the recent LinkedIn Talent Connect conference, and I will be entering next year. So I want to say, you know, on our webpage, I think if you go to jobs.pnl.gov, what you're going to see is a pledge to applicants. And I think we do try to fulfill that pledge. I would like to think our candidate experience is generally pretty positive. I mean, having won two out of the 3 years that the Candidate Experience Awards have been running, I think that means something. I would not say, you know, I think there's so many areas for improvement for us. But, you know, any person who interviews face-to-face, you know, we always call them back. Any person who does a phone interview, we always call them back. People have the opportunity to actually look online, and they can see whether or not they've been rejected. I don't do the rejected email thing. So, I mean, candidates actually can – they all know their status one way or another.
As a side note to that, what do you think about Glassdoor playing a part in some way, significant or not, to the employment brand?
You know what? As far as I'm concerned, I think transparency is a great thing. I think the more websites that are out there sharing people's story and telling real-life stuff, the good, bad, and the ugly, I think that's great. I am not a believer in the building up the fake image. You know what I mean? In my experience in having to headhunt esoteric engineers and scientists, they see through all that crap anyway, right? Mm-hmm. They kind of understand, you know, we're kind of quasi-government. So coming with that, there's bureaucracy that kind of comes along with that, right? But at the same time, what it offers is things like flexibility. They have the opportunity to have passion around what they want to do. They can, you know, it's the mission, vision, values around the science. So I think the more transparent companies are, whether that's through Glassdoor or, you know, Rate My Professor or, you know, whatever all the other companies out there that say, hey, here's what it's like to work here, the Yelp of companies, I think that's a great thing.
Good. Take us into the metrics that you care about. So when you're looking down,
there's only one metric I care about. So I don't know if people have gone on Talent Connect over for LinkedIn. That event just happened in Las Vegas, and your listeners can actually Google and watch the keynote speakers. I mean, it's free; it doesn't cost them anything. But there's a gentleman, I think it was Ed Nathanson was his name, and he's the head of talent acquisition for a security firm called Rapid7. And he and I share the same philosophy when it comes to metrics. He goes, let's face it, folks. What, at the end of the day, from a recruiting point of view, the only metric that really matters is hires. And for me, that's what I track, right? So when I sit down with my chief operating officer and I look, here's what our positions that are open, here's what's on the plan, here's how many hires we've made. And that's really the metrics that I track. And I found that recruiting is a very, you know, 1% failure on an offer is 100% failure, right? So when you have a strategic level position and you're looking for a high-energy physicist to do X, Y, and Z, and there's only, say, 100 of them in the country who can do that or around the world, you know what? Hey, I made 100 phone calls. I presented 35 candidates, or I've worked on it this many days. But at the end of the day, my chief operating is going to go, did we get the position filled?
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that's really all she cares about.
Is a subset of that time to fill, or do you even look at that?
Not really. I mean, heck, I had a client come in, you know, one of the high-level executives from my company come into my office last year, and, you know, we had just closed a pretty high-level position. And he was like, Dromgul, if you just hire one of those guys a year, I don't care if you hang upside down in your office like a bat. You know, yeah, I don't care what you do for the rest of the year. But that's how I get the funding every year, right? Through the fills.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're a small enough business. You know, my client is only a $600 million. It's a $600 million line of business. You know, we have about 1,100 employees. But, you know, I do positions occasionally outside of that client set. The lab as a whole is about $1 billion. So, you know, I'm not Microsoft. I'm not PepsiCo, Facebook, Google in size. I mean, our recruiting team
right.
is pretty tiny.
Right.
I mean, there might be other metrics we track, but at the end of the day, you know, it's basically openings and it's fills.
Got it.
And if something gets to like 100 days, then we kind of do, is this rec real? Because then there's an urgency issue.
Right. Tell me about the recruiting stack, the technology, recruiting technology, talent acquisition technologies that you think are critical versus...
You're going to laugh at this. Okay, so my company... We use PeopleSoft eRecruit. I don't think there's a recruiter listening to your show who likes their ATS. I don't think I've ever met a recruiter who likes their ATS. So that's always kind of a given. No, we don't like our ATS. But we literally can't even search our applicant tracking system. I can't even search it for resumes. That's how bad it is. I mean, it's like 1960s or something. So put in a system where you can't even search for resumes on your own database. Our entire recruiting budget for tools is less than $100,000 for a $1 billion company, right? So literally the only recruiting tool that I can offer our team is basically, in essence, it's LinkedIn Recruiter from an outreach standpoint. And you and I both know that that probably is only going to account for about 40% of the population. But so in our technology stack, all I can really offer our team is LinkedIn Recruiter, and we got like 4 job slots. And 4 seats. And we do have a partnership with direct employers, so I at least get a dot job site. And so that helps us integrate with sites like Indeed or Simply Hired. So that helps with applicant flow a little bit. But we have, the past 9 years that I've been here, we haven't used an agency once, and we have 100% fill rate. So for me, there is not an ATS, there's not a CRM, there's not a recruiting tool that is ever going to close a deal that is ever necessarily going to find somebody.
Well,
we're Salesforce, man. We're sales guys and gals.
Right. Let me wave my magic wand, and you are now head of the talent project at LinkedIn. So now you own the product.
So Jeff
Weiner
finally got smart enough to hire me? Okay,
right.
Let's go.
He did. I finally got the resume.
Okay.
A hold up on that, by the way. So anyhow, we've got that cleared up, and Jeff's giving you the recruiter product, and he's saying, Rob, take it. How do you make LinkedIn better?
I am glad you asked that question. In my opinion, I think LinkedIn, LinkedIn's kind of a touchy subject, but LinkedIn is at the nexus of recruiting right now. I think it's the gorilla in the room. I think there's a bunch of recruiters in our industry who like to pick on it. Oh, they're not really adding value. Yeah, I mean, it's like, oh, there's plenty of people who are not on LinkedIn, yada, 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 and, which is all true, by the way. But I think LinkedIn is in the best position of any recruiting technology company to really kind of take it even a step further. What I see happening and what I actually told the LinkedIn product people is I think what can make LinkedIn better is to actually use – to really use the macroeconomic data analytics. I think what's going to be happening with LinkedIn is you're going to see things like three-dimensional search. And I don't know if your audience is familiar with things like information visualization or scientific visualization. I think that field is going to start to merge with HR. I think today how recruiters search for people, you know, they're used to going to a Google-like screen and typing keywords, and you're used to seeing, you know, those, that page of results, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. What I think is going to be happening is those 240 million profiles that are on LinkedIn, they're going to be separated. Think of them as like stars in a galaxy or in a universe. And what we're going to be seeing in the years to come is we're going to be seeing search results based, you're going to see clusters of galaxies, which are people, and you're going to be able to search three-dimensionally within those clusters of capabilities to find talent. It's going to be like that Tom Cruise movie. That's what I really think is going to happen. That's what I really think is going to happen.
All right, so one of your kids comes to you and says, Daddy, I want to be a recruiter. What advice do you give them in terms of their career path?
I think that would be the greatest thing in the world. My number one piece of advice would be for them to get a 100% commission sales job working at an agency. And they can either just stay working on the agency side of the house, or if they want to go in-house, great. At least they've got the sales skills to be successful. You know, I think 100 years from now or 200 years from now, there's going to be some asteroid mining company that's going to need talent. And they're going to need a recruiter to find people, and they're going to need a recruiter to close the deal. Technology is never going to replace sales. You know, at the end of the day, every position is around a person. You know, they are married or have a partner. They've got kids in school. They're making this much. What are the schools like? Oh, what about this? You know, oh, I play ice hockey. Is there an ice hockey league out there? Everything comes down to relationships. So I think it would be a great career choice. I don't think recruiting is ever going to go away.
Nice. What do we? I know you keep up with the ecosystem. You read some of the blogs, and you know you follow some of those folks. What do we get wrong? The non-recruiters. What do we get wrong about recruiting?
I think there is an overemphasis on technology and process. There are many an HR executive or leader who will be in this, you know, in the past it would have been the smoke-filled room, but let's say the equivalent of the smoke-filled room or the ivory tower, and they're with these executives, right, and the HR person will say, like, well, let's make our strategic plan, and then they, like, draw these Venn diagrams or boxes on the whiteboard, and then they, like, draw this line, and then they say, like, recruiting, and then they'll, like, draw the line to Carnegie Mellon University or something. Well, if we just recruit from Microsoft or Google, and then they draw the line, and then they think, like, it's just done. Like, it's just magically going to happen. Well, if I invest, you know, $10 million into getting Taleo, and I implement that, all my recs are just magically going to fill. And that's where I think most HR executives or C-level people will get it wrong. Because how many times have I can think of so many instances where we have opened up a strategic level role, and I'll go to that scientist and I'll say, who do you think are the best people in the world in this space? Oh, well, I've known Frank. He's worked in this business 20 years, but he'll never come to P&O. Oh, well, have you ever asked him? Oh, I don't have to ask him. He's got a house overlooking the river. He's never going to move. Well, how about I call Frank? You know, you call up Frank, and all of a sudden you offer the job, and he's interested, and he comes. You know, because that's what really recruiting is. It's not about process. It's not about technology. It's basically an internet connection and a phone and a salesperson. I think that's what people generally get wrong. I mean, and you're never going to close a deal with technology. It's just not going to happen.
It's funny because there are secret Facebook groups that are dedicated to this very subject, because I think I agree with you. I think the people that are non-daily practitioners of recruiting try to sex it up. And at the end of the day, as long as there's a phone connection, you know, a name and an ID on the other side,
sure.
You know, then recruiting can happen. Hey, we've only got about 4 minutes left, and I would hate myself if I didn't ask you about vets.
Sure.
Because you've played on both sides of this. What are the barriers? Like, why don't we hire more vets?
Oh, veterans. Oh, yeah, I do a lot of veterans outreach. I would say, well, I do a lot of work with unemployed vets in my local community. And a part of the problem is a lot of vets, they don't necessarily know how to communicate and share their experiences. So there's a little bit of a communications barrier there. And the other piece is that a lot of veterans' backgrounds are just different. You know, so it's when you think about your traditional recruiter on the street, I'll bring up an example of a nuclear engineer. Traditionally, my lab will hire MS or master's degree or PhD nuclear engineers. And I had, for instance, I had about a 4 or 5 month unemployed vet. He was a Navy nuke guy, bachelor's in nuclear engineering. I was able to secure him an interview out here, but he didn't fit the traditional research profile of what my company was looking for. So what I did for that particular vet is we identified a local, you know, we have a nuclear power station down the street. I identified 35 nuclear Navy nukes who work at that company, at Energy Northwest, and we set that vet up with those people, and he got a job over there. So what I tend to see why we don't hire more vets is just because I think, what is it, about 40% of all hires in the United States are via referral. Like always hires like, right? And vets just don't look like us for the most part. And that's what it comes down to. I don't think people are nefarious about it. Or, you know, I think when you talk to the average person on the street, they love veterans. It's just when it comes to a choice between hiring a vet who they don't know or their neighbor, they're going to hire their neighbor.
See, I've got such a jaded take on this. I think HR and recruiters, there's a taboo against the unemployed. You know, basically, if we have a candidate and they're unemployed, we perceive that there's something deeply wrong with them or deeply flawed, that someone hasn't hired them yet. And I think there's another taboo, similar to that taboo with vets, that HR, for whatever reason, avoids vets. And I don't know. I don't think it's just the likes.
Well, keep in mind, HR doesn't make hiring decisions, though, right? So yeah. I always advise all of my vets to always go around HR. HR is their enemy. Hiring managers make hiring decisions. So I always tell I coach all of my vets. We use LinkedIn to find hiring managers, and my number one goal is to get them to be the referred candidates. Right, and that's how I get my vets jobs. We have a 70% placement rate for unemployed vets in our community.
Oh, that's genius. That's good
work
right there.
Granted, some of them are forklift gigs. I don't want to make it sound like it's all
roses
matter. And stuff. But, you know, but it's...
John.
Yeah, but that's
job.
What we do. Yeah.
Job's better than no job. Brian Cheney.
Oh, amen, right? But I tell you what, though, I had a 6-month unemployed vet who I did get hired at this company, and when I called to offer her the job, she was crying on the phone. You know, and here she was, an officer who was in Afghanistan and, you know, just did fantastic things for her country, great experience, and no one would hire her. And it took me like 6 interviews to get that gal hired. And when she finally got a job offer and she's crying on the phone, you know, so grateful that she could, single mom, right, single mom vet, served her country, no one would give her a job. It's just wrong.
It is.
You know, but I think recruiters who are listening on the phone can make a difference. I mean, I think if they all reached out to their unemployment offices locally and they helped those vets and taught them the social media skills and how to find other vets who are working and how to become a referred candidate, we can all give back and help that community.
Genius. With that, we're going to have to go ahead and let go. Rob, thank you very much for your time.
No, anytime. I had a great time. So thanks for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Everyone have a wonderful afternoon. Thank you very much for listening to Drive Through HR, and we're going to go out to a little Audio Slave. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you. It was fun.